Hello there, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Partial Historians, in which we shall continue our tracing journey of Rome from the founding of the city. I am Dr. Radness.
Hello. I am the co-host, or the other host. Oh, God. I'm Dr. Greenfield. Welcome.
Please, thank you. Other host. My better half is what I'd call you, really.
Thank you.
All right, so last episode, we did have a bit of a discussion about what on earth was happening in the regal period. But
turns out nobody knows.
No, not really. Crucially, however, I believe the last historical event, and I'm using my flesh rabbits again, that we discussed was the death of Brutus.
Yeah, so the death of Brutus, this is unfortunate, ends up on the battlefield, takes some jibes, doesn't handle them very well, up dead.
Whichever version you go with, either Livy or Dionysius or whatever, it's pretty clear that he died in that battle.
Yes. This means that we're up to around about 507 BCE, approximately.
Indeed.
For those who are interested in Roman chronology from their perspective.
Now, crucially, Dr. G, this means that we are one consul short, does it not?
This is unfortunate, yes. Yeah. they pick up the body of Brutus, as you do. Take him back to Rome, as you do.
Give him a great funeral,
Awesome funeral.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a massive public funeral, which Marcus Valerius... Oh, no, is it Publius Valerius?
I think it's Publius Valerius.
Valerius, the other consul, puts on for Brutus. And does it in the forum. It's all very nice. Everybody comes. Valerius does a funeral oration.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
And Livy says that the matrons mourned him for a whole year.
Oh.
I know.
What a man.
Yeah.
All the married women are very upset. Oh, what does that say about him?
I feel like a song coming on. What a good man. He's a mighty man.
Salt and pepper have a lot to answer for in terms of Roman history.
Yeah, it's pretty true. It's from my youth.
What's interesting about... And I've realised that I use interesting quite a lot whenever I'm making a new point, so, like, please pull me up when I do this.
I think you use the words interesting and douche.
That man is a douche.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So something that is fascinating, I'm expanding into synonyms,
nice.
About this moment in this public funeral oration is that Dionysius of Halicarnassus posits that this is the first time it's happened, that we've got this public funeral oration for a particular citizen who deserves to be lauded for their great deeds in life.
Interesting, yeah. Okay.
And this sets up the tradition of the public funeral oration for the patrician class in many respects.
Which will become super important. Absolutely, yeah. Cool.
Wait for it. Super important.
Yeah, that's right. Note to self. I don't know, 200 or 300 years, we'll be coming back to this.
Well, and curiously, Brutus is not... Nobody's really sure about whether he's actually a patrician or a plebeian.
Mm.
It's not exactly clear at this point in time, either.
Well, given that we don't really know for sure who the patricians really were, you know, like, we think that they had something to do with maybe the Etruscan class, maybe they had something to do with that original body that Romulus put together. Like, it's really... it's pretty...
And the patrician class is also in flux as well. Families get added into it.
Exactly.
We've seen that happen already.
Yes.
So the speculation about Brutus's position is partly to do with the fact that some of his descendants, they're plebeian.
Yeah.
And they go into plebeian positions.
Yes. And we would sort of think, I think when we're looking at it simplistically, you automatically want to think that the patricians are therefore like noble in some, and therefore you think that they are upper class wealthy people, but as we'll see later on, that's not necessarily the case at all.
No.
So yeah, that's why I think it gets a bit
What's in a name?
Yeah, exactly. Poor patricians. Okay, so yeah, sorry. Livy goes on to say basically that poor Publius Valerius is the mercy of a fickle mob. Who turn on him so quickly in that they seem to suspect that he was aspiring to be king. I know.
Who'd have thought?
I know.
Seems to be a perennial trouble at this particular stage of the shift between monarchy and republic, is that every time you get a consul who's by themselves for any length of time, it's like...
Yeah.
Does he want to be king?
Yeah, what's he angling at?
What's he trying to do? And it's like... forget the fact that Brutus has died in battle, and that's completely
coincidental. Yeah, exactly.
What's Valerius getting out of this?
Oh, yes.
Possible kingship.
Yeah, and I guess I can kind of understand that, given that, you know, the monarchy's only a few years behind them, and the kings are still alive and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. I can see that maybe you might be a bit paranoid.
You'd be concerned, yeah.
Yeah.
Dionysius brings some other elements into play as well. He suggests that the positioning of Valerius's house on the top of a particular hill.
Yes, Livy mentions this as well. Yeah, yes, yes.
Gives this sense that maybe he thinks he's literally above everybody.
Oh, symbolism.
Yes.
But of course, I'm assuming he had that house beforehand.
I want none of your logic here. I'm an angry mob, and I think he wants to be king.
Yeah, well, see, I'm just guessing here. So maybe not. Maybe it was the fact that he picked a house after Bruce died.
Look, I think it's very reasonable that he lived there beforehand.
Mm.
Nevertheless, the position of the house becomes an issue.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So the best thing you can do when you're Valerius and you're the sole consul, what would you do?
Well, I think I'd get myself a colleague. Quick smart.
Good plan. Yeah. Good plan.
Basically, in Livy, we've got these laws coming about, mm-hmm. which would basically clear him of, you know, seeking kingly power in some way.
Oh, yeah. Look, yeah, I've got some little snippets on this.
Yeah.
So there are a few things that he does. He creates a whole bunch of provisions for the plebeians.
Right.
This is sort of an appeasement gesture, if you like. Good. He gives them the right of appeal.
Mm.
If a magistrate wants to put them to death, they can be like, wait, I need to take this to
hold
some other
thought.
People.
Yeah, hold
yeah, yeah. I need the people to have a say in this.
Yeah.
So placing some provisions around the way that patricians are allowed to interact with plebeians and the sort of the plebeian right of reply, if you like.
Yeah, that sounds fair. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is cute. The plebeians really like that, and they give Publius Valerius a new name.
Is this the people's friend?
Yeah, they call him the people's friend, or Publicola.
Nice.
Or Publicola, depending on how you like to do your Latin.
Yeah.
But I think that's very cute.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you know, he's...
They hate him, they love him, they hate him, they love him.
Well, he did get a new co-consul.
Yeah.
He picked the old stalwart, Spurius Lucretius.
Yes, and it's rather unfortunate, I suppose, that he does, because according to Livy, Lucretius is only consul for a couple of days before he kicks the bucket.
Yeah, look, I mean, the safe choice in some respects. But unfortunately, he doesn't last long. And then, like, the whole problem of, like, you're a sole consul again comes into play.
How annoyed would you be if you were him?
Well, then he chooses Marcus Horatius.
That's the guy I've got too. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is, and he does live.
Good. Excellent.
That settles that issue.
Yeah.
And just to clarify the matter of perhaps his house being symbolic on top of the hill, he moves down the hill.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's being very wise, really. He's just admitting that.
Like, really, the hill is an issue for you people. Yes. All right, fine, I'll live in the valley.
Exactly. You know what? It's so not an issue for me that I'll just move.
I'm just going to move.
Yeah, exactly.
That will solve that for you, fine.
Nice. Now, according to Livy, it's around this time that they finally get around to dedicating the Temple of Jupiter, which is on the Capitol.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this is it's Valerius and Horatius, however you want to, however you want to take it, that it's while they're consul that they get around to actually doing it because of all the upheaval and stuff.
Yeah, you know, they've been busy.
Yeah, exactly. They've been sort of moved to the bottom of the list. So that's kind of important. You know, pretty big deal temple-wise.
Yeah, look, Dionysius just brushes over that.
Yeah, well,
doesn't even come into play.
No.
As far as he's concerned, all of the stuff with getting the plebeians on side and having a new consul.
Well, that is very important.
That kind of just wraps up the year.
That is very important. Yeah. Well, and then, of course, I mean, you might not expect Publius Valerius to make an appearance as consul again, given the love-hate relationship. But according to Livy,
year 506.
Yep, he's back. He's back.
He's back again.
Yeah, except with a new colleague.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have Titus Lucretius?
I do have Titus Lucretius.
Nice.
Yeah, and So, one of the things, and before we go any further, because I don't want to impute this particular change to this particular consulship, but it is Valerius who introduces this. Wait for it. It's a Fasces moment.
Oh, I like the Fasces moments. Please tell me, Dr. G, what's happening with the Fasces.
So, we've talked about how they divided up the Fasces so that the axes were shared month by month on a rotational basis.
So, unfortunately, if you wanted to kill someone while you didn't have the axes, might be an unfortunate
moment. You could just
moment.
Hit them with the rods and hope for the best.
Just beat them a little bit. Yeah.
Unfortunate, but, you know. This is the point in time, according to Dionysius, where they decide they're going to change a little bit about the way the Fasces work.
Okay.
And that you can only use the axes when you're outside the city walls.
Ah, this is interesting. So, a bit of extra protection for the literal Roman
citizens. Calm citizens. Yeah. I'm not going to kill you with the axes.
I'm only threatening when I'm outside of the sacred boundary.
I'm threatening everybody else. Yes. Not you guys. I love you guys. I'm not trying to be king.
So does he say, okay, so it's to do with that aspect, is it?
It seems like it seems like it's reasonable enough sort of gesture. Sure. You're worried about me taking too much power? I put the axes outside the city, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the visual symbols of my power are now at a slight remove.
Interesting. Actually,
but then I'm like, does this mean that the thing with the month and back and forth is now over? Because
because
it'd be like, I've got to spend a month outside of the city because it's my turn to have the axes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that wouldn't work.
It just seems very confusing.
Because consuls are meant to be in Rome, presumably.
What?
Yeah, I know. Well, I would presume. I mean,
maybe they just leave them in like a little sort of like box at the wall. And as you leave the city, be like, Fasces men, lick doors, pick up those axes.
Yeah. Grab your cloaks, grab your walking shoes, and don't forget the Fasces.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see rods and axes. We're leaving the city. Yeah, something of
this. Yeah, that's interesting. Because, I mean, obviously, particularly at this point in time, it's not like Rome has this huge empire, you know, where the consuls are going to be jaunting off.
They definitely don't have a huge empire.
No, exactly. So, yeah, you would presume that the consuls really are
this has got to be a massive retrojection.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense at all.
I'm very confused. Sources, what are you trying to do to us?
Yeah, kill us. Give us a headache.
Yeah, right. Well, what's interesting...
Intriguing.
Curious.
Yeah.
What is really fascinating.
Yes.
Maybe I'll just switch to fascinating from now on. What is fascinating about 506 is we have the census.
Nice.
Smile and nod, audience. Smile and nod. Yes.
We have talked about the importance of the census before.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they do one.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, sweet.
Anything significant about this census in terms of moving people about or just...
Nah.
They just have one.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really trust the numbers in any of these sources anyway, so... Sure. Yeah. I mean, I could tell you the figure, but what would be the point?
Yeah. It's a great attitude to have.
History happening to you in a very professional way right now. The number stands, according to Dionysius, at 130,000 citizens.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
That's just the men.
Okay, yeah. Well, of course. Who else counts in this day and age?
Well, you say that, but wait, the women are going to come into play a little bit later on.
I'll stay tuned. I shall stay tuned. Mm. See, Livy at this point in time seems to be rather concerned with where the remaining Tarquinii
I suppose we should stress at this point that Tarquinius Superbus is not yet dead.
No, we're still very much, he's still very much on the scarpa, basically.
Yeah. He's been thrown out of Rome. Yeah. He's still alive.
His evil plans, I'm not going to do the laugh this time, his evil plans have come to nothing so far.
But he's still alive.
He is still alive.
Still potential.
Yeah, and he's basically, at this point in Livy, he has gone to the King of Clusium. Who is one Lars Porsena. Dun, dun, dun.
I kind of like the name Lars Porsena. It sounds quite... It's very modern, I feel.
I know. I feel like it is,
like,
too.
Lars,
I feel
Lars.
Yeah.
Come here.
My favourite storybook as a child was about a polar bear called Lars. And so I just, I have good associations with that name.
Don't be deceived, listeners. Lars is not somebody you want to be friends with.
No.
Despite how modern he might sound.
Yes. I mean, our Roman source... Well, my Roman source, anyway. Your pesky Greek source. I don't know what he's
about.
Yeah. My Roman source indicates that he is someone to be feared.
Yeah.
He is someone to be reckoned with.
Definitely.
Now, whether this is because he genuinely was, or whether the Romans just wanted to make him out to be because they didn't really get the upper hand, or maybe a bit of both, I would say. This is how they portray him. And basically, Tarquinius seems to be seeking his backing at this point in time in Livy.
Yeah, it's always a good rhetorical strategy to build up the enemy.
Yes.
In order to make it look better.
Yeah.
If and when you finally defeat them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but nonetheless, Porsena is in league with the Tarquinii. This is pretty clear. And he's decided to take some action on that front.
Yeah. I mean, according to Livy, he's basically talked into the idea that it's best that an Etruscan is king at Rome.
Well,
so yeah,
way to strip Porsena's ego.
Well, yeah, no, it's basically said. Yeah, okay. I back this idea that you're putting forth to me, Tarquinii, that there should be an Etruscan king at Rome, and
yeah, I'm willing to help you out with
that. It's honourable. Yeah, exactly. I will back you with that. So yeah, he decides to gather together forces and rally forth.
Yeah, and this is where all of the old characters come out of the woodwork, really.
Yes, yes, yes.
As far as Dionysius is concerned, this means that we're now in 505.
See, Livy, it seems to be perhaps a little bit earlier than that. But, I mean, you know, as we said with this date, it's like, who the hell knows?
Yeah, well, we have, so, surprise, surprise, Publius Valerius Publicola is consul again.
Yes.
With now a guy called Marcus Horatius Pulvius for the second time. So there's a lot of... So Publica, or Valerius, I'll just continue to refer to him as that because that'll make it easier, I think, is consul for the third time. Horatius is now consul for the second time. Do you have a sneaking suspicion that they might be just sharing a kingship here?
Yeah. We see Livy seems to indicate that. It's during the second... Well, he's talking about the alliance happening during the second consulship of Publius Valerius and that of Titus Lucretius. So this is at the time that Porsena is basically going, okay, yeah, I'm listening to what you have to say. Yeah. Listening to what you have to say, and I like it. and so he's talking more about the alliance taking part at this point in time. Yes.
And then we hit 505, and I've got a big note that says war.
Yeah. Quite a significant one indeed, yes. Because, yeah, it's basically Porsena and his allies.
Yeah, basically, so Porsena is allied with people such as Tarquinius Superbus.
Yes.
Perhaps unsurprising.
Yeah.
Also dragging along quick behind Octavius Mamilius, the son-in-law of Tarquinius Superbus.
Well, he
comes out of the woodwork.
Well. The whole family's getting back together.
Yeah, and the sons as well.
Yeah, of course. You'd expect them to back their father, you would think.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there seems to be some threat of war. The Romans hear about it. Porsena and his troops are on the march.
Yes.
And the Romans try to sort of negate some of the imminent danger by sending all of the shepherds and stuff in the surrounding area off to some forts.
Yep.
Probably poorly constructed ones, which never mind. And decide to strengthen the defences at the Janiculum.
That sounds wise.
Yes, the hill, which is on the other side of the Tiber, but has a good view towards Rome and is where one of the bridges across the Tiber is.
And it's going to play a rather crucial part in this battle, isn't it?
War is all about strategy, my friends.
Yes, exactly.
Bridges are very important when we're having a war.
So, yeah, in Livy, basically, once the enemy actually arrives, the Romans all... go into the city, like, go, you know, from your surrounding area. If you are, you know, with outside the walls, you would go in, obviously, for protection, which makes sense to me. I don't question that.
It is.
And, yes, this bridge. The bridge.
The bridge.
Yes, exactly. It may have been breached, but, according to Livy, one man defies an army.
Oh, and what a tale of woes.
Exactly. One Horatius Cocles. Do you have a similar story?
I do. Dionysius provides some background details to the layout of the forces and how they're arrayed.
Nice.
On the other side of the Tiber, the side that's not Rome.
Right, yeah.
The un-Rome side.
Yes. the non-Rome.
Yeah. So Porsena is lined up and he's in the center of his troops, which is very exciting. On the right, he has Octavius Mamilius and the Latin allies. And on the left-hand side, he has Sextus and Titus Tarquinius and the Roman exiles and all the Gabinii. So, like, yeah, all of the narrative stuff that's been building up to now, all of these various people that have been pulled together. Set piece battle time.
Yeah.
Hello. The Romans, for their part. In the centre, the consuls.
Of course.
On the left-hand side, and thus opposite Mamilius, Marcus Valerius, the brother of Publicola.
I was going to say, is he any relation?
He is. And Titus Lucretius, the consul of 506.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so former consul there.
Yep.
On the right-hand side, and thus opposite the Tarquinii and all of their baggage.
Yes.
Spurius Lasius. Who'd have thought? No, we've never mentioned him before.
I was going to say, am I meant to recognize his name?
And a guy called Titus Herminius.
Okay.
And no, you haven't heard of him either.
Good, because I have nothing going around in my brain right now.
So anyway, they have a sort of the battle.
Yes.
The army's engaged.
Yes, yes.
Apparently everybody fights very bravely.
Of course, but of course. Would you expect anything less in a set piece battle?
Well, no.
No.
Turns out that a whole bunch of the Romans get injured. Some of the significant figures,
yes.
Valerius, presumably not the consul, presumably Marcus, Titus Lucretius.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody on the left-hand side.
Yeah. Okay.
Now they get carried off wounded. This is a blow to Roman morale.
Yes, I can imagine. What they need is a hero.
I feel a song coming up. No.
No. I need a hero!
Thank you.
I lied.
Good. No, I appreciate it. The Romans flee. Perhaps unsurprising.
Oh, dear.
Or surprising. I mean, they're the Romans. What are they doing? Guys, don't flee. That's the worst thing you can do. Where are you going to fall back to? There's only a bridge behind you. It's a bad move. But
maybe they know. Maybe they know. That there is a man capable of defending that bridge.
The Romans have many men.
Yes.
Some of them decide that they can hold off the whole advancing armed force at the bridge.
Yeah.
Suicide mission.
It's obviously
perhaps a
narrower path, you know, like.
Oh, yeah, let's
more
not.
More difficult.
Let's not all get 300 and Sparta on it.
Oh, I want it.
It's a bridge.
Yeah.
It's a rickety old thing
that
they don't ever try to change. They just try to fix up so it's manageable because it's special to be, like, not fixed up. It's like their special bridge. And so, like, they're trying to get all of their men across it.
Yeah.
Becomes clear that, you know, they're going to need, like, some fullback guys who just hold ground to allow the rest of the army to make it back to Rome.
Yeah.
And so we have, Spurius Lasius and Titus Herminius.
Both mentioned in Livy too. Yeah. Yes. Apparently they're famous for their birth and their deeds.
Yes. Well, those two have only recently come into the narrative.
Exactly.
Along with a younger man, Publius Horatius, they all decide that they're the three.
Yep.
I'm trying to speculate on how wide this bridge is.
Yeah.
If three men could be the ones who hold it against the whole army. But for now, just imagine it's not a very wide bridge.
Yeah, I would say so. That's the impression that I get too.
Yeah. Now, interesting. Oh, no, not interesting. I hold myself
intriguing,
back.
Intriguing. Yes.
So, Publius Horatius, this guy who acquires the name Cocles.
Mm.
Because he's only got one eye.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. But this is a result of the battle that he's currently in.
Exactly. So the two eyes at this point in time.
He has two eyes currently, but he's about to have only one eye.
Yeah.
He's thought to be the nephew of Marcus Horatius,
ooh,
consul. And these guys all trace their descent, theoretically,
right,
from those fancy triplets.
Ah, the fancy triplets. I was going to say, actually, this name does ring a bell.
It does, and it should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he turns out to be the most awesome in the Holy Trinity in the Livy
account. Oh, yeah,
because whilst at first it's like the three of them trying to, you know, hold off the army.
And they do quite a good job.
Yeah, they do.
They do it for a while.
But, yeah, exactly. After a while, I mean, how amazing are these guys?
I don't know how long a while is.
Yeah, Horatius says, go, just leave me. I can defend the bridge. At least in Livy. And then I love this part. And again, I know this is a translation, but still, it's great. Darting glances of defiance around at the Etruscan nobles, he now challenged them in turn to fight. And now he railed at them collectively as slaves of haughty kings, who, heedless of their own liberty, were come to overthrow the liberty of others. I added this bit. And this, of course, makes them hesitate. And they go, ooh.
Wait a minute, this guy means business.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, what with the sass man?
Exactly. And it's shame that makes them attack, not the fact that he's vastly outnumbered or anything like that.
I don't let numbers come into it.
No. It's shame.
Of course, of course. Well, so he sort of gets, he says to Herminius and, and Lysias, he's like, go to the consuls, get out of here, and tell them to cut the bridge on the other side.
Yeah, I'll hold it until
I'll hold it until then.
Yeah,
just leave. And they're like, are you sure, man? Like,
that's crazy, man. That's crazy. It's a suicide mission.
Yeah, there's only three of us right now. And it's like, if we go.
I love this scene.
Yeah.
And this apparently, is made for a movie.
Yeah. And apparently all the Romans on the other side, including the consuls, are like, come on, guys, get over here, like, don't stay there. And Horatius is like, I'm staying here, cut the bridge, cut it. So he gets overwhelmed a little bit while they're cutting the bridge.
You shocked me.
I know, who'd have thought. The shame is spurred on the enemy. They come at him with everything they've got. He's overwhelmed. He has a great number of wounds in many parts of his body.
I am shocked.
One in particular inflicted by a spear passing straight through one of his buttocks.
Wow. You know, that sounds the level of detail. Yeah, exactly.
Forget about his eye.
I don't think I
was going to sit down.
I don't think I have that part in.
And eventually the bridge is broken.
Yeah.
And he leaps into the river. And manages to swim across.
Even with a buttock wound.
Even with a buttock wound. No. And his number of other great wounds.
You shock me.
Yeah. And for this, the Romans are like, wow, that is impressive stuff.
In fact, it's so impressive it's statue worthy.
Yeah They create a bronze statue for him.
Fair enough.
Stick it in the forum. They think he's gonna die. I mean,
he doesn't seem to.
No But they're pretty sure that he's going to.
No.
For a good while. They stick a crown on him, they take him into the city, they sing songs.
Whoa. What the WTF? They stick a crown on him?
Yeah.
Not
a kingly crown.
Okay, good. I was going to say, because seriously, after all that, Valerius, you want to be a king?
Yeah.
Even if they think this guy's going to die, they still shouldn't be throwing crowns around loosely.
Yeah, they throw a crown around, apparently.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the proviso that, like, he's got so many wounds that they think he's going to die, you know.
Sending a mixed message, I dare say.
Well, perhaps.
Yeah.
But anyway, he doesn't die.
No. In Livy, apparently, he's given as much land as he could plow around in one day.
Yeah, but is that with the wounds or after he's healed?
I don't know.
I mean, how much of a reward is this? But yeah, they give him a whole bunch of land. And this is where the women come into it.
Okay.
Every person, according to Dionysius, both man and woman, at the time, when they're all suffering under the effects of the war, they give him a day's ration of food.
It's important.
The number of people amounted to more than 300,000.
Jesus Christ. Well, he surely couldn't eat all that in one day.
Well, presumably not. No. I mean, he's going to live now. And this is kind of like being on welfare and having a disability pension.
I hope they spaced it out.
Unfortunately, he is rendered useless by his lameness. He doesn't recover from...
I was actually thinking about that. When they said as much land as he could plow around in one day, I'm like, how much land could a man with this many injuries plow around in one day?
I'm assuming not a whole lot.
No.
Some of the wounds and injuries don't heal sufficiently to render him unlame.
Yeah.
So
in other words, he is lame.
He is lame. So even if he was better, still probably not doing a great job.
Yeah. Apart from being, you know, a symbol.
Yeah, so it's considered to be a tragedy that he is lame, because this means he can't go on to hold military positions or the consulship, because how would he fulfill the role properly?
Yeah.
And
Fair enough.
Even though he would be a standout Roman sparkling citizen at this point in time.
Totes. And, I mean, in some of the books that I have read, it's suggested that this story and the other stories that we will get to during this time are basically stories that are invented to sort of redeem the Romans in their own eyes, because...
You've got to have a noble defeat if you're going to be defeated.
And also the question that, I mean, I don't know what Dionysius says about what Porsena's up to in your account, but basically it seems like Porsena and Livy is kind of repulsed, and then he lays siege, and although it is very close, the Romans are kind of hanging in there until eventually they come to terms with Porsena. And the question is, did Porsena perhaps actually just occupy the city at this point in time. The Romans don't really want to admit to that.
Would you want to admit to that if you were a Roman?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, we've got these later references, like in Tacitus and Pliny, which indicate that maybe, yeah, maybe the Romans got the worst of things.
Look, this is a pretty dark time.
Yeah.
I mean, Porsena's troops in these narratives gets as close as the city.
Yeah, and like in Tacitus, he makes a mention that one of the worst things that ever happened was the city's surrender to Porsena. Ooh. Not come to terms with, but surrender to.
Ah, snap.
Exactly. So did he actually conquer Rome at this point in time?
Mm.
And are the Romans focusing on these sort of stories of individual bravery to try and make it
all
seem
got.
Better? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Quite possibly. I mean, certainly the nature of the battle and even the way it's described.
Yes.
Getting this close to the city is horrific.
Bad.
This is really bad.
Yeah.
This is as bad as Rome's had it up until this point in its history.
Yeah.
As far as anybody's concerned. And this might also tap into this really strong anti-Tarquinii sentiment as well.
Yes.
Because not only do they throw out this king.
Yes.
But
he then goes
he maybe takes it back.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Exactly. And it all seems very confusing.
And so how much of the narrative leading up to the expulsion of Tarquinius Superbus is really emphatically lifted up or maximized by the way things play out afterwards?
Totally.
And so you've got to go back then and make him out to be a much worse figure than he may have been.
Yes.
In order to, I mean, the sort of vows that they take against the Tarquinii
are pretty extreme.
And it's like, what would prompt something like that? And it's
like,
I mean, he was a douche.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've had them before, guys.
Well, and also, as we mentioned, I think, in our last episode, the kings up until him were generally okay. So, I mean, you know, sure, nobody's perfect.
Mm.
But, yeah, as far as we can tell, they haven't really done anything to arouse that kind of vitriol, you know. And, okay, yeah, so Tarquinius Superbus is in power for a while, but nonetheless, could you really erase, you know, all good memories of a system that's been working for, according to them, a couple of hundred years by this point in time with just one king?
Like, yes you can.
Yes, you can.
I answer that question. I rise to this challenge. Yes. This is exactly what they do.
Yeah.
And so this leaves us with this sort of interesting focus on really minor characters, essentially. Horatius Cocles is a nobody.
Yeah.
This is the...
He does descend from those triplets. Hello. Mythical triplets.
Yeah. And look, not to dismiss his importance to other things, but there is a version of his story where when he's in the river, he calls upon the god Tiber to save him. And actually, that's
too.
A really piece of important evidence for me in other areas of my research. So I'm not going to dismiss
is
him.
It? No, okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to dismiss him out of hand. But as far as, like, major players go, this guy is not one of them.
No. And The fact that they do have to sort of switch focus from massive battle to individual bravery, what are they trying to deflect our attention from? it's like a magician. Watch what I'm doing over here while I'm doing something else over here. Yes.
Well,
should we pause there?
On that note, I think we should probably wrap up. So we've reached this sort of moment where the Romans have been thoroughly defeated in the battle.
Yeah.
And we will see how this plays out later.
They managed to tear some sort of symbolic...
Some symbolic...
meaning
sort of,
or something.
Sense of valour
and
Romanness out of it.
Totally.
And they had enough time, even though, like, the enemy's at the gates, to, like, you know, have this guy do his thing where he has the ox and decides to plough some land and gather some rations. And, you know, there's lots of things that they did, like erect a statue.
Yeah. And there are going to be more. I mean, next episode, listeners, stay tuned, because there are going to be more fascinating episodes of individual bravery. Have you ever heard of Mucius Scaevola? Or, for the ladies out there, finally, we have Cloelia.
Ooh.
You don't want to miss these stories. They're actually amazing.
Yeah. Just you wait.
Yes.
Just you wait.
And if you have been enjoying our episodes, listeners, please drop by, leave us a message, particularly on iTunes. We'd love to get some reviews happening there.
Yeah.
Boost our profile, whatnot. We want some individual glory.
The internet, it can be ours.
Indeed. Join us next time.